On this 27th day of July 2011, in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary, by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we are in Chapter 3, Karma Yoga, Text 14. 3:14. Annad bhavanti bhutani parjanyadanna sambhavah yagyad bhavati parjanyo yagya karma samudbhavah. Translation: all living bodies subsist on food grains, which are produced from rains. Rains are produced by performance of yagya or sacrifice, and yogi is born of prescribed duties. Purport. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan, a great commentator on the Bhagavad Gita, writes as follows: Ye Indra Gangataya Vishtitam Yagyam Sarveshwaram Vishnum Abhyarchatat Chesham Ashnantitena Tanteha Yatram Sambhadayanti Te Santaha Sarveshwarasya Yagya Purushasya Bhaktaha Sarva Kilbishayar Anadi Kala Vibridhayar Atmanam Bhava Prati Bandhakar Nikalai Papa Vimuchante. The Supreme Lord, who is known as the Yajna Purush, or the personal beneficiary of all sacrifices, is the master of all the demigods, who serve him as the different limbs of the body serve the whole. Demigods like Indra, Chandra, and Varuna are appointed officers who manage material affairs, and the Vedas direct sacrifices to satisfy these demigods so that they may be pleased to supply air, light, and water sufficiently to produce food grains. When Lord Krishna is worshipped, the demigods, who are different limbs of the Lord, are also automatically worshipped. Therefore, there is no separate need to worship the demigods. For this reason, the devotees of the Lord who are in Krishna consciousness offer food to Krishna and then eat, a process which nourishes the body spiritually. By such action, not only are past sinful reactions in the body vanquished, but the body becomes immunized to all contamination of material nature. When there is an epidemic disease, an antiseptic vaccine protects a person from the attack of such an epidemic. Similarly, food offered to Lord Vishnu and then taken by us makes us sufficiently resistant to material affection. And one who is accustomed to this practice is called a devotee of the Lord. Therefore, a person in Krishna consciousness who eats only food offered to Krishna can counteract all reactions of past material infections, which are impediments to the progress of self-realization. On the other hand, one who does not do so continues to increase the volume of sinful action, and this prepares the next body to resemble hogs and dogs, to suffer the resultant reactions of all sins. The material world is full of contaminations, and one who is immunized by accepting prasadam of the Lord, food offered to Vishnu, is saved from the attack, whereas one who does not do so becomes subjected to contamination. Food grains or vegetables are factually eatables. The human being eats different kinds of food grains, vegetables, fruits, etc., and the animals eat the refuse of the food grains and vegetables, grass, plants, etc. Human beings who are accustomed to eating meat and flesh must also depend on the production of vegetation, in order to eat the animals. Therefore, ultimately, we have to depend on the production of the field and not on the production of big factories. The field production is due to sufficient rain from the sky, and such rains are controlled by demigods like Indra, the sun, the moon, etc., and they are all servants of the Lord. The Lord can be satisfied by sacrifices. Therefore, one who cannot perform them will find himself in scarcity. That is the law of nature. Yajna, specifically the Sankirtan Yajna prescribed for this age, must therefore be performed to save us at least from scarcity of food supply. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmiditam Mena Tasmai Shri Yudhve Maha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So this is the first of two verses that kind of go together, in which it is explained that the very process of eating basic process of life naturally depends on grains, naturally depends on the product of the field. But that's impossible without sufficient rain, which is ultimately out of the hands of us. We can't control it, although we make pretensions of trying to sometimes. So we have to rely on higher powers. What are those higher powers? Those higher powers are the devas, specifically Indra for the rain, Chandra for the moon, Surya for the sun, Varuna for the waters in general. All of these things are essential for life, Vayu for the air, but they cannot be produced by us, so we're dependent. So how can we assure them? That's described here by yajna, yajnyan bhavati parjanya, by sacrificing to these demigods. This was the whole point in the Indrajagya, in the Govardhan Leela, because that had a different end ultimately. But the logic of the farmers there, of the agriculturists headed by Nanda, was perfectly correct. They had always done this and they had prospered. So again, the point here is that there is a very strict government in the universe. Nothing happens by chance. There's a government, and the ultimate control of that government is the supreme control of Krishna. As he says in the 13th chapter, Upadrashta Hanumanta Cha, that the Svrupa soul is overseeing everything. Or as he says in the 9th chapter, Maya Dikshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam, that by my supervision, Prakriti, as under the guidance of the different gods, is creating everything here, and the whole universe is working by that supervision. So this idea that there's some impersonal force or chance that causes all of this wonderful organized activity of the universe, the sun's coming up at just the right time, it's not too cold, it's not too hot. Now we're thinking, oh my God, we've heated up the universe, the Earth atmosphere with the carbon dioxide, it's going to become a little too warm. And then what will happen? Oh, the glaciers will melt, the ice cap will melt. It's happening already, right? And if it melts, then the waters will come up and create havoc. So why is that happening? Well, the easy answer, the summary answer is sin, is activity against the law of Krishna. All of this artificial building up this technology, this is demonic. This is built on absorption in the modes of passion and ignorance, and complete disregard of the laws of God, the laws of nature even. So, but here's the actual fact. Yajna karma samudbhava. So yajna is born of prescribed duties. So there's a certain organization of society for this varnashram system. Each of us, according to our psychophysical nature, our position in society, has certain duties to perform. And when they perform properly, according to the instructions of the Vedas, then we perform. Each social group has its own yajnas to perform, has its own sacrifice to perform. Just like the Kshatriyas here. It's a sacrifice to go on the battlefield and to fight. It's a sacrifice to take on the headaches of management. The Brahmins, it's a sacrifice to always be teaching and advising, performing austerities, living simply. It's a sacrifice of the natural, I wouldn't say natural, but the propensity of the living being to always seek more comfort and self-aggrandizement and all these things. The Vaishyas also, they need to perform sacrifice and charity. They're the ones who produce all the wealth in society. So they're meant to give charity to the Brahmins. They're meant to pay taxes to the Kshatriyas. They're meant to protect the cows. They're meant to, all of these things are our proper duties and sacrifices. And they're born of prescribed duties, as karma samudbhava. Karma in this case means prescribed duties, as Prabhupada explains in the word-by-word meanings here. So when society is not organized on this principle of sacrifice according to varnashram, then havoc occurs. You have a degradation of the social structure and the spiritual ashrams, that's neglected completely. And so you have what we have today. Let's look at the Kshatriya class. Now Krishna describes that these classes are always there. They're created by him, so they have to be in some form in the society. even though they may not be engaging in their activities according to the rules of the Vedas, still, there are those who are intellectuals, there are those who are military men, they're martial by nature, managers, leaders of men, you know. There are those who are, you know, they have the golden thumb, whenever they touch turns to money. We had a devotee here once like that. He could always, you know, do some business here and there and create. It's very good having someone like that around. You know, they're business. They're always thinking, you know, of ways in which they can make more and more money. Or, more piously, agriculturists, farmers who, you know, work the field. And then you have a lot of the majority who are manual laborers. Manual laborers. They're good with their hands, you know. So that's born of one's nature. You have a certain nature that you maybe inherited from your parents, we say, or we would say, according to your karma. But they're supposed to be regulated, centered on the service of the Lord. Atak pumbi dvija shrestha varna ashrama vibhaga saha suanusthitasya dharmasa sangsidhi haritoshana. That all of the activities of the varna and the ashrams, when nicely performed, only find perfection when they're centered on satisfying hari. This is the declaration of the Bhagavatam, second chapter, first canto. So, needless to say, that's not happening today, and therefore we have vestiges, distortions of these. Look at the Brahminical class, would be the Brahminical class in a normal civilization, a proper civilization. So you have the intellectual class, but they sell their services to the highest bidder. Like I remember some years ago, there was this accounting firm that was cooking the books for, I think it was Exxon. Remember the Exxon? Was it Exxon? Not Exxon. What was that oil energy?
Enron.
I'm sorry, Enron. So they had a scheme how to make money. I forget what it was, but it was cheating. They pulled out billions of dollars from California by faking brownouts and a light. Not on the floor, probably. Sorry. And this accounting firm was involved in them, and they went down eventually. They were very well known. You know, accounting means you trust them. Anderson. You know, over the years they had built up their name, and they had to be trusted because you can deal with everyone's money, right? So they were in on this scheme. So to be a good accountant, you have to have a certain amount of intelligence. So these are brainy guys, you know. But their brain was used in the service of this multi-billion-dollar scheme to bilk mostly the Californians out of a lot of money by energy manipulation. Or this, you know, very smart people. You know, the Pentagon, you know, they have their tentacles everywhere. I'm sure they're in the universities looking for those who, you know, like a nice career in the military. What to do? Thinking up new weapons, new ways that you can kill people. We don't even know, you know, so many of the secret things that they have going on there. It's totally demonic. Krishna mentioned in the 16th chapter that the demons are conspiring to perform horrible deeds meant to destroy the world. Well, that was the originally Brahminical class. This person who's an intellectual, has a high IQ, whatever, ideally would become a Brahmin, learn the Vedas, teach mantras, you know, and pass on Sanatana Dharma. No, it's perverted into serving the masters of war, you know, or the Kshatriya class. You know, there are those who are fighters and martial by nature. So they're also dragooned into fighting unnecessary wars and corruption, you know. The Vaishya class, you know, I mean, millions and billions made illegally, you know. Even you find, you know, drug runners and things. I mean, they have a business sense, but they're doing it, you know, they make millions. Completely illicit activity. And the Shudras, they're never satisfied. You know, they're getting beaten down. So they organize, have a revolution or something. It's a chaotic. Nobody's satisfied. There are periodic crises and then solutions, and there's really no solution. Dukkha aushadam tadapi dukkam. This is a phrase by Prahlad Maharaj. The very remedy, aushadi, you have for the misery you may find in this world, and you will find it. It will come to you, unsought.
dukkha alayam.
This is a place of misery. So we're going to have difficulties. Right? They're going to come to us. Oh, yeah, well, we'll have a remedy for it. But that remedy causes more difficulties. Dukkha alshadam tatapi dukkham. So then you have another remedy. And meanwhile, you're more further and further entangled. So without this simple process, eventually, and Prabhupada has mentioned this, and this is what the theme of this purport and verse of, is that there will be gross scarcity. You know? I mean, even now, you know, the way it manifests is that the prices of food go way up, so you can't afford. You know, or like you have in East Africa now, there's just no rain. You know, they always seem to get the brunt of it. But it can come here as well. You know, it can come here. What is it like? 40 million people in America are on food stamps? 1 in 4 kids is on food stamps? That's ridiculous. This is supposed to be the richest country in the world. Food stamps mean, you know, you'll starve unless the government gives you some, you know. Then you go and buy the cheapest food, the diet is horrible, you get sick. You know, it just escalates like this. So, because there's no sacrifice, there's no understanding of the actual way things are working. And we're in the grip of the demons who are running things. Big financiers, multi-billionaires. I read that in India, there's 55 men, multi-billionaires, who control $250 billion, which is like 1/5 of the whole economy of India. 1/5. I mean, it's turning into an oligarchy, where you have very rich people at the top, they hire their private armies, and you have all these serfs at the bottom, you know, just trying to eke out a living. So, that's the world we live in. So Krishna's making this simple point here that one has to perform sacrifice even if you want to eat. And in the next verse, it will be clear that ultimately that sacrifice should be toward the Supreme Person. Prabhupada makes the point, and there's a verse in the Bhagavatam that makes this point very clearly. This analogy is used all the time. Yata tado mula nishechenena chupyanti tat skanda bujo pashaka pranopahara chayatindriyanam tatayava sarvahana matyutejya. So achyuta ijya means one who, if you worship achyuta, Krishna, then here's what, it's just like pouring water on the root of a tree. You have to know how to water a tree. If you go, you get a ladder, you water each leaf and branch, that doesn't work. The tree will actually dry up. The water has to be supplied to the root, and then all the branches and the twigs and the fruits and flowers are nourished, and the leaves, right? Or if you eat, you have to provide food to the stomach, and then the digestive process works and everything works nicely. Similarly, if you worship Krishna or Vishnu, then all of the branches, namely these demigods, sarvaharanam, all of your worship is taken care of. They're very satisfied. They become satisfied. But if you worship Indra separately, Krishna's not satisfied. As he showed in Govardhan Lila. And so, you know, but at least you're worshiping. You know, the point of this is that at least you have to do some worship. Then hopefully you'll turn your worship to the real root of it. But if you don't worship anything, then you're just an out-and-out thief. That was the previous verse. Then you're just enjoying these facilities that are provided without recognizing where they come from. And you can never be happy, and eventually there'll be scarcity. Scarcity of water, scarcity of food, even the earth, the air becomes polluted. It may not be, you know, there's enough air to breathe, but the air is full of poisons. China is so smart, you know. They're booming, you know, 8%, 10% a year, growing. What are they doing? Burning coal. You practically can't even live in Beijing now. It's so polluted. And there's not enough water, and the desert, desertification, this is called desertification, the desert, Gobi Desert is moving and growing, I think it's Gobi Desert. And you have these massive dust storms. So they have these big buildings and all of this growth, and people are choking on it, poison air. This is going on. This is what happens when human beings think we're in control. We're, by our ingenuity, our money, our power, we will control this earth. But nature always wins in the end. Hare Krishna. comments on this particular verse. All right, let's read the companion verse, text 15. Karma bhamod bhavam vidhi brahmakshara samudbhavam tasmat sarvagatam brahma nityam yagye pratishtitam. Regulated activities are prescribed in the Vedas, and the Vedas are directly manifested from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Consequently, the all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice. Yagyarta karma, or the necessity of work for the satisfaction of Krishna only, is more expressly stated in this verse. If we have to work for the satisfaction of the Yajna Purush, Vishnu, then we must find out the direction of work in Brahman, or the transcendental Vedas. The Vedas are therefore codes of working directions. Anything performed without the direction of the Vedas is called vikarma, or unauthorized or sinful work. Therefore, one should always take direction from the Vedas to be saved from the reaction of work. As one has to work in ordinary life by the direction of the state, one similarly has to work under the direction of the supreme state of the Lord. Such directions in the Vedas are directly manifested from the breathing of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is said, Asya mahato bhutasya nishvasitam etad yad rigvedo yajurvedaha samavedo tarvangirasaha. The four Vedas, namely the Rigveda, Yajurveda, Samaveda, and Atharvaveda, are all emanations from the breathing of the Great Personality of Godhead. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4, 5-11. The Lord, being omnipotent, can speak by breathing air, for as it is confirmed in the Brahma Samhita, the Lord has the omnipotence to perform through each of his senses the actions of all other senses. In other words, the Lord can speak through his breathing, and he can impregnate by his eyes. In fact, it is said that he glanced over material nature and thus fathered all living entities. After creating or impregnating the conditioned souls into the womb of material nature, he gave his directions in the Vedic wisdom as to how such conditioned souls can return home back to Godhead. We should always remember that the conditioned souls in material nature are all eager for material enjoyment, but the Vedic directions are so made that one can satisfy one's perverted desires, then return to Godhead, having finished his so-called enjoyment. It is a chance for the conditioned souls to attain liberation. Therefore, the conditioned souls must try to follow the process of yajna by becoming Krishna conscious. Even those who have not followed the Vedic injunctions may adopt the principles of Krishna consciousness, and that will take the place of performing of Vedic yajnas or karmas. So this is the companion verse. You notice the last verse ended, yajna karma samudrava, that karma is born of prescribed duties. And this verse begins with karma. Work or prescribed duties are born out of Brahma. In this case, Brahma means the Vedas. How are you going to know what your prescribed duty is as a Kshatriya, Vaishya, Brahma, or Shudra? You have to consult the Vedas. And you should know that, he says, Arjuna. And where do these Vedas come from? Akshara, from Samudram. Akshara here means the supreme Brahman or the personality of God. Therefore, logically speaking, Sarvagatam Brahma, the all-pervading Brahman, is the place where yajna is situated. In other words, if you want to know the details of yajna, which is necessary if you want to eat, then you'll have to consult Krishna. He's the supreme Brahman. So it all comes back down again to how Krishna consciousness is really our only hope. For us, you know, it's not really possible or necessary for us to study all these details of the intricacies of yajnas for the different gods and goddesses. You know, luckily for us, Krishna has provided, in the form of the Sankirtan yajna, a way to solve everything, to become completely in tune and with all of the demigods and the devas. And if the whole world were chanting Hare Krishna, and in every home here there were Bhagavad Gita class, and once a week we'd all go down to Qualcomm and have a big Sankirtan festival, you know. Then the rains would fall at just the right time, just the right amount. There wouldn't be all of this crazy global warming and everything. Because people would live simply, you know. Life can be so simple. There isn't a the reason why people are dissatisfied, because if you have no access to the satisfaction of Krishna consciousness, then you're always under the thrall, as we described last night, of the demands of the senses, the demands of the kama, demands of anger, you know, and all of these other things, fear. They're what's pushing you, pushing you, pushing you. And therefore you build bigger and bigger weapons and bigger, you know, bombs in order to defend yourself until it has a life of its own. It's far beyond what we even need for defense. You know, but that's the impetus for it. You know, or bigger and, you know, more and more elaborate ways to satisfy the senses. So many things is completely unneeded. You know, extravagant. There's an upper crust of people in the world, the United States, like 1%, almost like, you know, 30, 40, 50% of all the wealth. 10% or 90% of the wealth. What do they do with all that wealth? Well, there's a big luxury industry, you know, we don't even know about. You know, the private airplanes and the limousines and the secret spots they go and, you know, the Bahamas and places. Try to amuse themselves. You know, all kinds of drugs and everything. Are they happy? I don't think they're as happy as Nitya Gaur sitting here. Simple brahmacharya. Because if you chant Krishna, you know, you get in tune with that. I mean, I've been doing this for 40 years. You know, I'm just thank my lucky stars that I didn't get into that frame of mind. Because 99% of the people who get into the frame must be dissatisfied. No one can meet the criteria of opulence and luxury and fantasy as pumped out. So there's the dissatisfaction. But just being Krishna conscious, not even fully Krishna conscious, but just being Krishna conscious to some degree is so satisfying. You know? I had this, you know, escort car for so many years. Who cares, you know? Not a big deal. Not a, you know, the car was like chugging along, doing what I had to do. And I was completely, you know, the old whole mentality that, oh, you know, this is a junker car. You know, well, why? Because, well, why do I need a nicer car? Well, the classic, you know, thing, so you can get the girls. Well, I'm not getting the girls, so Hare Krishna. Out of the game. I'm driving up to L.A., you know, every few months I'm going up there now. I used to go more often. And the whole way up, I don't even play any music. I'm just chanting all these verses. You know, I remember one time I was in a traffic jam. This is quite a saga. It's interesting, you know, sometimes things kind of throw you for a curveball, you know. I'm on my way to India via Singapore Airlines. They always travel in the middle of the night. So I had this ride to the airport like 11:30 at night to catch a 1:30 plane or 2 o'clock plane. Okay. All right. So I end up realizing after I'm dropped off by Archita Prabhu that I don't have my passport. You can't go anywhere without your passport. I'm in L.A. The passport is down here. So what to do? Luckily, he was up. I was able to get back to the temple, you know. But I figured my whole, you know, I'm going to miss the plane. I can't go to India. It's like a disaster, you know. So I call up my friend Gopal Bhatta Prabhu. I happen to be carrying some money to India from him because he has, you know, he does a lot of projects. So I said, I can't carry this money to India. I'm not going to be able to go. I'll give it to Archita. He's going the next day. Said, no, we're going to get you on a plane. So he has all these connections. So, but you have to get your passport. So to get my passport, you know, I had to drive down back here at 5 in the morning, you know, and then back up to L.A. in the middle of rush hour. So, all right, I got the passport. I'm on my way back, you know, no rounds chanted, you know, feeling kind of weirded out. But I'm listening to this wonderful kirtan on the speaker system. This wonderful kirtan by Bibi Govinda Maharaj. And I just listening over and over again. And I was in the, you know, traffic, you know, with a stick shift, you know, the clutch moving, you know, it's a trip with the stick shift in, you know, traffic. Yeah. But that didn't bother me. I'm listening to this kirtan, I swear, tears are coming down. And I'm just saying, who cares? I hope this traffic jam lasts an extra hour. You know? Now, you know, I eventually went to India and did what I had to do here. But that could have been like a completely anxiety-producing thing for someone, you know. If it was a business trip, you're going to, you know, lose out on some money or something. it did produce some anxiety because I wasn't going to be able to do my service. But you know, but the point was is that by the blessings of Krishna consciousness, the holy name, I felt completely happy, even in this unpleasant situation, driving, you know, what is it, 4 hours that you know, two down and 3 hours up, 5 hours on the road, you know, to get this crummy passport. But I'm listening to this kirtan the whole time. Didn't happen. Everything's fine. Yeah. So the point is that when you place your faith and your attention in material ideas, material aggrandizement and pleasures, you'll never become satisfied. And the little happiness you have is very fragile and temporary. It's a little pleasure with a lot of pain. Lots of pain. New, you know, birth and death, so many lifetime sinful activities. Prabhupada points out, vikarma. Nunam paramatta kurate vikarma yarindriya prita yapanoti. Rishabhdev says, certainly, it is certainly true that those whose only mission in life is indriya priti, sense gratification, are mad. Nunam paramatta, totally mad. Kurate vikarma, and they perform vikarma, because, and by that vikarma, you don't get the indriya priti, you get another body to suffer miseries. So it's a foolish proposition. So a little bit of pleasure, certainly there's some priti, lots of pain. Krishna consciousness, little bit of pain, you know, little tapasya, unlimited pleasure. So you make your investment. Where's the return? What's the best return? A little austerity, get up early in the morning, chant Hare Krishna, stay clean, learn the science, do's and don'ts. Yes, the pushings of the mind are going to be there, pushings of the senses. You have to resist them. And we have to do our best, even if we don't make it back this lifetime. Next lifetime you pick up two or three lifetimes, four lifetimes, you're out. Back to Godhead. You know? Where is that in compared to the millions of births we spend in all these species, you know, rooting around in this material world? If you believe it, if you understand. So, the simple argument that Krishna is making here is that if you want to eat, you need rain. If you want rain, you need sacrifice. If you need sacrifice, you have to act according to your prescribed duties. Well, what the prescribed duties? Well, you find out from the Vedas. Where do the Vedas come from? Come from Krishna. Therefore, if you want to eat, you have to worship Krishna. You know, what to speak if you want liberation. So this is a simple thing. And then there was, of course, the aspect of prasadam, which was in the previous purport. That's another very important aspect here, is that this is yajna shishta, we learned in a previous verse, that we're eating remnants of sacrifice. It's a sacrifice to cook for the deities at the right time. As, you know, Balarama, someone who spent hours, you know, cooking the rajbhog and so many things. It's a sacrifice. But it's a pleasurable one. If you do it in the right consciousness, It's a wonderful service for Krishna. It's a archa, actually. To cook nice dishes for Krishna, and then we take the shishta, the remnants, and that feeds the body and the mind, and protects one from sinful reactions. You know, it not only feeds the body but the soul, the spiritual advancement. So this is a cycle of sacrifice, and Krishna will speak about it in the next verse. Any questions on these two verses? Okay, let's go on. Evam pravartitam chakram nanavartayati hiyaha agayur indriyaramo mogham parta sajivati. My dear Arjun, one who does not follow in human life the cycle of sacrifice thus established by the Vedas certainly leads a life full of sin. Living only for the satisfaction of the senses, such a person lives in vain. Report. The mammonist philosophy of work very hard and enjoy sense gratification is condemned herein by the Lord. Therefore, for those who want to enjoy this material world, the above-mentioned cycle of performing yogas is absolutely necessary. One who does not follow such regulations is living a very risky life, being condemned more and more. By nature's law, this human form of life is specifically meant for self-realization. in either of the three ways, namely karma yoga, jnana yoga, or bhakti yoga. There is no necessity of rigidly following the performances of the prescribed yogis for the transcendentalists who are above vice and virtue. But those who are engaged in sense gratification require purification by the above-mentioned cycle of yogi performances. There are different kinds of activities. Those who are not Krishna conscious are certainly engaged in sensory consciousness. Therefore, they need to execute pious work. The yogi system is planned in such a way that sensory conscious persons may satisfy their desires without becoming entangled in the reaction of sense gratificatory work. The prosperity of the world depends not on our own efforts, but on the background arrangement of the Supreme Lord, directly carried out by the demigods. Therefore, the yogis are directly aimed at the particular demigods mentioned in the Vedas. Indirectly, it is the practice of Krishna consciousness, because when one masters the performance of yogis, one is sure to become Krishna conscious. But if by performing yogis one does not become Krishna conscious, such principles are counted as only moral codes. One should not, therefore, limit his progress only to the point of moral codes, but should transcend them to attain Krishna consciousness. So this echoes the beginning of the Bhagavatam in the first canto, when Vedavyas, who had written all of this karmakanda and different sections of the Vedas, even the Vedanta Sutra, but he felt a dissatisfaction. He had written the Mahabharata, the Bhagavad Gita was there. But there was something missing. He felt some dissatisfaction. Because you have to understand, he's writing completely out of an act of compassion. He's writing for us. Not writing to make money by publishing and going on a book tour. You know, he's writing to get this information out. It has to be written down for us because we can't just hear it. You know, but something was awry. He couldn't figure out what it was. Well, he guessed, actually. But to confirm it, Narada Muni, his spiritual master, came down. And he said, basically, that if all there is this business of yogya sacrifice and enjoying and going to heavenly planets, coming back down, then ultimately it's a failure. Because ultimately you cannot be satisfied by that either. This is the lesson of the ninth chapter where Krishna talks about this. He says, I forget the Sanskrit, but those who worship me indirectly by worshiping the demigods, they may go up to the heavenly planets and enjoy godly delights. Evam bhuktva swarga logam, swarga logam vishalam. Bhukva means enjoying, in Swargaloka, the heavenly planets. Vishal means broad, you know, enjoyment, much greater than here. You live longer, you have a youthful body, you know, the whole thing. But, chine punye matya lokam vishanti. That eventually your punya, your pious credits, don't take your mouth like that, in the temple, are used up. Just like, you know, the bank account with a credit card. You can enjoy on your vacation so long, but eventually if you don't go back to work, the card is going to be spit out. Sorry, Mr. Jones. You know, you can't have no more credit. And you have to come back to work. So you come fall back down to this earth. So Krishna says, by this process, coming and going, you really don't make any progress. Therefore, one should just worship me. I'll provide what you need. I'll provide your welfare in this world. I'll carry it personally. Ananyas chintayantoma. So, but in this portion of the Bhagavad Gita, Karma Yoga, at least come to the point of being pious and worshiping the demigods. That's more or less what's being said here. You know, and then if you're really smart, you'll understand, well, the demigods are working under me, and the Vedas are coming for me, so you'll worship me. So Krishna consciousness basically is you know, the radical solution. And really nothing else is going to work in this world. Because we've seen historically, in India, when the Vedas were being misused, you know, the rules and regulations, exactly what's said here, is that it's supposed to keep you within certain moral boundaries so that your senses just don't run riot. But they misuse the Vedas. Oh, there's provision for some cow sacrifice? All right, well, they'll end up slaughtering the cows. Perversion. So Buddha comes. You know, forget the Vedas. Let's have, you know, right, the Eightfold Path, you know, Ahimsa, like that, you know. And then Sankaracharya comes to preach hidden Buddhism. Are like, you like Buddhism? Here, you can have your Buddhism, but at least base it on the Vedas. We'll call it Mayavad. So then, you know, then Madhva and Ramanuja and finally Lord Chaitanya, and even up to today, comes to refute that misinterpretation of the Vedas called the, you know, the, in the Vedanta Sutra, called the Sharirika Bhasha, you know, in order to bring it back to the real purpose of the Vedas, which is bhakti. The real purpose of the Vedas is to connect us back again with Krishna in loving devotion. And then all the other things are provided. The material is automatically there. Even your liberation is automatically there. And the crown jewel, which is only available for bhakti, is actually there, which is prema. You know, it's worth reviewing these four goals of life, you know, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. It's important to understand what those things. So people perform dharma. Part of dharma is this jagya. If you do it right, then you'll have prosperity. Artha means money. So if you're a pious person, you go to temple properly, you live according to the rules, then you'll prosper in this world, either in this life, next life. You'll get the benefits of a pious life. And with that artha, you can then satisfy your material desires. So this is like a cycle. You have to perform the dharma. Otherwise the artha will stop coming. But then eventually you see, well, this is not getting me anywhere. I'm still dying and I'm still coming back. So let me have moksha, liberation. Right? So liberation becomes the fourth goal. Four goals, purusharthas of human life. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. But even moksha is a negative thing. If moksha simply means to you not coming back, no death, you know, no form, no sensual activity, because the senses are what's keeping us tied to this world, then that negative conception will not satisfy you. And your liberation will be incomplete. You may even, by great austerity, imagine if to be liberated, you know, there's only one way. I have to be liberated, there's only one. And that is to suppress all the activities of the senses and stop the mind. So that I'm just thinking of the void. I'm just thinking of the white light. How long can you do that? 5 minutes? But you have to do it all the time in order to be truly liberated. So very few can do that. Very determined, misconceived, but determined, can rise up to the Brahman platform. That's the platform of just being aware that you're conscious. Just a sat realization. I'm eternal. What's the content of my consciousness? No content, because there's no variation. That's all illusion. Just white light. You know. How long can you say? Naturally, we want some relationship, some activity. So they come down again, they fall down again, because they're reversed to Krishna's lotus feet. So the fifth purusharta, prema pumarto mahan, it's one of these nice little phrases to understand. I'll say you say, okay? Prema pumarto mahan.
Prema pumarto mahan.
Okay. Here's what it means. Prema, love of God. Pum is short for pungsa, means human being. Artha, goal, mahan, great. Prema is the great goal of human life, the ultimate goal. Fifth purusharta. Prema pumarto mahan. That's given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu freely. Namo mahabhadanyaya Krishna prema badayate. You, my Lord, says Rupa Goswami, are the most munificent, compassionate avatar, because you're freely giving prema. The fifth goal, greater than moksha. You know? Through what? Sankirtan. Get together, chant the holy name, and dance, and then take prasad. Big austerity. But there's only a handful of us here. People don't know. There's so much in it. You know, gotta go here, gotta go here, gotta enjoy here, make some money here, go here, spend it. So we try to break into that craziness. Here, take this book. Try this prasad. Hare Krishna. Oh, you know, break through. Give them the holy name. Somehow or other, interest them. A smidgen of a faith in Krishna. A little interest, you know. It's hard, you know, because this is the Kali Yuga. It's difficult. But movement keeps growing somehow or other. You know, so many books are being distributed. Temples are being opened. Maybe not right here, but they're being opened around the world. You know. So, Lord Chaitanya's movement, Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam. This Sankirtan movement will prevail, will be victorious. That's what Vijayate means. And Lord Chaitanya said it, Pradivityate, in every town and village my name will be chanted. And Prabhupada proved that it's possible, and it's going on. Any final comments or questions? Jagya. If you don't, Then here's another nice phrase: Ugayur indriyara mombogam parcha jivati. One who lives simply for a sinful life of sense gratification lives uselessly. That's what that line means. Ugayur indriyara mombogam parcha jivati. So we don't want to waste this precious human life in simply activity for the senses. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.